Instant Illumination. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, here in Campo, California, with Instant Illumination. Today is going to be a fun day. We're going to consider some interesting, fun things today. We're going to talk about the allness, the isness, the ain'tness, the are-ness, the whatever. Our title is Illumination Reveals All. Aware of the now, I realize all is. Yes. Yes, Rex. Rex sat up and he said, yes, now what? Consider what it means to be absolute and to be relative. No. It's a tough thing to do, because being absolute and relative, what do? Being absolute and relative, we play the role of dualism. Now, being relative is perfectly fine and perfectly right and perfectly good, and anyone is welcome to do it whenever they wish to do it. In fact, the majority of humanity does it. I would say 95% of humanity does the humanity game. And 5% of creatures living on Earth, and Earth just alone, are living in absolute. Now, you say, well, if 5% are living in absolute, why don't we know about the 5%? Why aren't we aware of these 5% who are living in absolute? Well, you are aware of them, and you are blessed by them, because they surround this Earth with their pure white light of love, and you shake up this earth with your human love and lust and pretend and so forth, and you make everything into a big boiling cauldron of nonsense, and the masters, the absolute ones, they just see everything in divine order. Now, let's just take the story of Jesus. These are simple things because we have learned them and read them and heard them. Okay. Jesus was sleeping on the boat. And the fishermen were fishing. I mean, he didn't care. He was on a ball. And all of a sudden a storm came up. And the boat started to rock and roll. And Jesus was just sound asleep. He just rocked in the arms of Morpheus. They're just having a great old time. And the disciples came to Jesus and said, Jesus, Jesus! And, oh, he was.
We know that was.
He woke up. And he said, well, what do you want? And he said, save us. The storm is going to sink us. And Jesus said, what storm? You know. And then he looked around. And he saw the storm that the disciples had created by their confused consciousness. And he saw that it was pretty bad, pretty rough. And so, what did he do? He just said, peace. He said, storm, stop it. Get out of here, storm. We don't want you around here, storm. Storm, stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it, storm. You know, storm, storm. You know, he didn't get angry at the storm. He didn't do anything. What did he do? He gave the solution, didn't he? What's the solution to something that's totally out of balance?
Peace.
Balance. What's something that's totally out of peace? Peace. Now, when something is totally out of balance, that which brings balance to it, which is peace, of course, that which brings balance to it is very, very wonderful. Now, these 5% spiritually illumined beings who are aware of their absolute self and live in the absolute consciousness, they do not even see the confusion on earth. They do not even see the imbalance of the unhappiness on earth. All they see is there is this beautiful planet. And they look upon it and they say, isn't it wonderful? Everything is in divine order. Everything is in peace. And then no matter what the humans attempt to do to put it out of order, their original purity and integrity is always extant. It is always there. Now, if they would stop fighting so much for their humanity, and my, how we fight for our humanity, if they had stopped fighting for their humanity, they would experience their divinity. And it is so easy for people to do this game. Now, if you're going to be a counselor, I'm going to say this 100 times now. If you're going to be a counselor, if you can be a counselor, if you can be a counselor, if you're going to be a counselor, you got to have somebody to counsel with, don't you? Somebody's got problems. And so the thing is, apparently being a counselor is not a divine idea. It's not an absolute concept, is it? All right. Now, a counselor has to recognize that there was a problem and to it there is a solution. And that can't be an absolute idea, can it? Now, what is your absolute, if I can use that term, your original, absolute, original purity and integrity? What is it? It is without need to change. It is the fulfillment. It is the allness. It is the totality. It is done. Okay, now, since it is done, there is nothing to add to it or change about it. Now, when people come to counselors or teachers and they want to be taught something, you see, you have made a big mistake in coming to me. And your big mistake is that I deal on an absolute level and you want me to deal on the relative level. And so you try to intimidate me to play on the relative level. And so I go along a little bit just to see if you're really for real, you know. And I notice that you are wanting that relative level. And I say, sorry, that's not where I am. Evan, what is my statement about the teachings that we have, if you call them teachings? What is my statement about what we're doing here? It is our last
step.
See if I give the clue, jump in clue there. You got it. It is a last step. It is a last step. Now, when you are master of this step, you're aware of your absolute self, and there is no more relative. There is no more relative. There is no more relative. There is more relative. I can say that a million, 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 million times. There is no more relative. It is the pure illusion. And absolute is not an illusion. Absolute is an allness. Absolute is not here or not here. Absolute is an is. Now, how can absolute be an is? You follow?
Yes.
How can it be an is? Well, it isn't. See, absolute is undefinable. Relative is definable because it's so changeable. If it were not changeable, you couldn't define it. And it is always changing. Relative today is one thing, tomorrow is another thing, the next day is something else. The relative has no consistency to it. The relative has no law of cause and effect to it. It uses the law of cause and effect insofar as I am absolute, I am absolute, I am absolute. I'm absolute, I'm absolute, I'm, and pretty soon you move into that consciousness, which is your allness, and the relative ceases to exist. But so long as you play the game in the relative, you will think that that's important. You will think that's what you want. Illumination reveals all. Aware of the now, I realize all is. Illumination reveals all. And you see, you get spaced into it, a little bit here, a little bit there. You get spaced into a little bit of the isness, a little bit of the allness, a little bit of the relative, and you think, wow, do I know a lot. Now, I was talking to you and trying to get your irritation, but I got your enthusiasm instead of your irritation. I was talking to you and I said, we're going to have a chip, and the chip is going to be slipped right in here, right underneath your skin, and it's going to have the all knowledge of the universe. It's going to have the allness, the totality of all that is in the universe. How wonderful, how wonderful, how wonderful. You're going to be the one
mind.
Yes, the one mind. You're going to be the one mind. That's the chip, the one mind chip. Well, you already got it, but can you conceive if one could plant the one mind chip in there so that you could have readily available? Now, you have the one mind chip in your head. Now, use it. But tell me, what's 9 times 10 times 12 times divided by 11? And you say, 13. And I say, that's right. How'd you know that? I guess the one mind chip in me works, you know. And, okay, right now, what's Sam doing right this minute? And don't guess. You know. So, mentally, you know. And you say, Sam is having a cup of tea, or Sam is taking a nap, or Sam is whatever. But the thing is, you know, because you're the one mind. And you say, well, maybe he's not. Well, then you're also not the one mind. You're closing yourself off from it. Now, you can be aware of it or not be aware of it as you wish, but if you close yourself off from it, the one mind's still there. It's still giving you all that information, still telling you all these things. And if you don't listen, we've always had the one mind in us. We all are the one mind, but we like to play the human game and fight for your
limitations, and they're yours.
Fight for your limitations, and they're yours. Fight for the fact that I don't know, and you don't know. Because you don't know that you don't know. You know that you don't know. And so therefore, you don't know, which is silly, but it's true. You see, we're dealing with something that's a lot of fun, but also mind-boggling. All right, let's just say this now. Play this game with me, if you will. Santa Claus is in his place at the North Pole, in his house. And, of course, there is no North Pole. There is no place for his house to be. It's all water. But he's in his place at the North Pole, which is a beautiful illusion. And Santa Claus has his elves filling up his bag with all of his toys and stuff, and placing his bags at strategic points around the earth. No, he isn't. He's got one bag. One bag. And everything is in that one bag. Everything is in that bag about this size. Every single toy that any kid wants, a bicycle, a car, a new horse, or whatever, and it's in that one little bag. Okay. See, that takes imagination. Okay, now. And already you're saying, ha, 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 loony, 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 toony, you know. Okay, so, now, that was interesting too. But now, Santa has a cup of coffee with Mrs. Santa Claus and has a cookie and says, well, sweetheart, I'm off. And she says, have a good Christmas Eve, Santa Claus. She calls him Mr. Santa Claus. Have a good Christmas Eve, Mr. Santa Claus, and know that I bless you on your wonderful trip, bringing joy to all the boys and girls all over the world. So Santa gets into his sleigh. His elves are helping him because Santa is kind of fat. Because he drinks a lot of hot chocolate, and he eats a lot of chocolate chip cookies and stuff like that. So Santa gets into the sleigh, and he's in this sleigh, which is a nice, comfy seat, and it's air conditioned, and it's warm conditioned, and it's all conditioned, and it's wonderful. Well, now Santa is getting ready to go on his trip, and he knows all his reindeer by name, but a big blizzard comes up, a big terrible fern comes up that makes everything invisible. You can't see. And so Santa says, I guess we'll have to postpone Christmas. I can't see my way. And then Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer comes into the show. And Rudolph says, Santa, I can help. Well, what can you do, you silly little reindeer with a red nose? What can you do? He said, well, I can lead the way. Well, it's worth a try. So Santa takes Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and hooks him up to the front of the sleigh. Why he hooks him up there? He can stay where he wants anyhow. But he hooks him up to the front of the sleigh. And so they got Dasher and Dancer and all the rest of the wonderful reindeer. And they're on their way around the world. So they're never late. They always come after midnight. After midnight in every home on earth, which is quite so. And usually they come down a chimney. And if they don't have a chimney, they find a way to get in. They slide under the door or something like that. I mean, they're really magic people. And to every boy and girl in the entire universe, in the entire world, they bring presents. And they have received letters at the North Pole. Santa has a deal with the postal service around every country to receive these letters. Now he's got them on the internet, but he receives these letters, and it tells what every boy and girl would like to have, and how some boys and girls say, well, give my sister a doll and give this here, and if you have anything left, I'll be happy to have this, you know. And you say, isn't that a nice boy or nice, and that is not a nice boy and not a nice girl. That's not principle. That's not principle. So the boy writes, dear Santa Claus, I want a pony, and I want a barn, and I want somebody to take care of my pony when I'm in school, and I want these things. And Santa Claus says, okay. And he brings him the pony, and brings him the barn, and brings him the man to take care of it, and all that good stuff. You say, wow, he's got all that in his bag, you know. And he really, it's quite cool. So, and then Santa Claus, all I want is my mommy and daddy to be back together again. Well, mommy and daddy died in a car accident, and they're not around. So Santa Claus brings them in his bag and gives them to the kid. Here's your mommy and daddy back together again. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. And they forget the past that they ever died. It is a spiritual healing, and that wow. Santa Claus can do that. Santa Claus can do that. Do you understand that?
Of course.
You understand that you've got to have imagination. You've got to have a wildest imagination to do these things. But isn't Santa itself the wildest imagination you can imagine? And this is what they tell kids for centuries, you know, and they're still telling them, even in the 21st century, where people look at it and say, that's, you know, a little flaky, but you know, if Bill Gates can do it, you know, why not, you know? So then Santa's making his trip all around the world, and he is talking to children everywhere, because some countries, he goes in and talks to them. The children are having a party, and he goes in and talks to them. And he speaks every language and every dialect fluently. And he always has his white beard and his red outfit, and he's always perfectly dressed. And he used to have his white ermine and stuff like that, but since we're against killing animals, even to eat, you know, even though everybody's meat, anyhow. And so we're against killing animals, so he doesn't wear ermine anymore. He wears ersatz, that means made-up white fluffy thing around his neck, you know, like the girls do in the show girl business, you know. Okay. So. And so, but that's him. Now, occasionally, Santa gets tired. How could that ever happen? So then he invites somebody else to take over for him. And this somebody else comes over and takes over for him. And he sits back there smoking his pipe. He's smoking a pipe too, you know. He's smoking his pipe and he's having his bottle of nice warm toddy, you know. And somebody else is doing the rounds. And nobody thinks a thing about it. And then sometimes Santa Claus does silly things like, I saw Mama kissing Santa Claus last night. Well, that was Santa Claus's helper. His name otherwise is Daddy, you know. But there are a lot of Santa Claus's helpers around. But the real Santa Claus is one. One God, one mind, one Santa Claus. Interesting, isn't it? One Easter Bunny. One tooth fairy, you know. Isn't it interesting how all these things are? You see, now, you have no trouble playing the game with me hearing that story. You have no trouble with saying, whatever, you know, not objecting or acquiescing to it, but you have no trouble. But because it is charmingly put. Harry Potter is written in such a charming manner, and so consistent with the irascibility of young people that everyone loves it. The teachers love it. They see their own children in it. Parents love it. They see their own children in it. And children love it because they see their own imagination being done, you know, with the magic wand and with the magic cloak that makes you invisible and all that neat stuff. And there's no trouble believing it. And then what are some of these other books that are out now? The Tolkien books or whatever they are, and the Ring.
Lord of the Ring,
and lots of other books of that nature. And you see, they're all into this fantasy. And you know who wrote the first fantasy book? Moses. Mm-hmm. The Bible, you know?
That's true.
That's a book of fantasy, if you ever heard it. Now, can you imagine making the Red Sea open. He had to be someone pretty special, you know, or had a good imagination.
Yeah.
And can you see turning all the rivers into blood in Egypt? Yeah. My goodness sake.
Yuck.
Yuck, yeah, is right. And can you imagine letting Abraham scare the living hell out of his son? Saying, son, you haven't behaved. Son, you're not behaving. Son, you're not being a good boy. Ah, oh, Dad, I'm, you know, the big man's son. I can do what I want. And so then Abraham goes to his son and says, boy, God said, I must put you on the altar and sacrifice you to him. And the boy says, Dad, you're kidding. No, God said that. Of course, God was Abraham. And so Abraham says, come, you got to help me gather the wood. You know, really scare the living hell out of the kid, you know. And that's, of child abuse or mental abuse in this ultimate form. So then that goes on, and then they gather the wood and put it on the altar, and then they tie up the boy and put him on the altar, and then Abraham says, my God, you know, look, there's a ram that's caught in the brush. He had some of his servants tie the ram up in the brush so he couldn't get away and be available when Abraham needed him. And so Abraham went to the brush, and there was this beautiful ram, and he cut loose Isaac, and they went over there, and they brought this ram to the altar and worshipped him, you know, and offered him to God, and the boy was a wonderful son from that day forward, you know. He minded his father, and he minded his P's and Q's, and he was good. So you see, that's how these things work. I find this ludicrous that we don't keep a telephone handy so that we can answer it immediately, you know, and that way we don't have to rush away to do it. But that's okay. We're playing a game of being human, and playing a game of being human is what it's all about. So can you see you have to be something special to live in absolute?
Yeah.
You have to be something very special to live in absolute. And if you can live in absolute, you can excel beyond Santa Claus, beyond Abraham, beyond Moses. You can excel beyond all of them and be the divine being that you are. Okay. So, try that out. And remember that I love you, I love you, I love you.
I love you.
Because I love me.